The human being has always had an obsession with turning an activity into a major sport, which explains beer pong. Today is the 2 millionth running of the Boston Marathon, where both a bunch of avid runners and those that hardly get up enough energy to walk to the bathroom participate in a running contest. You know, I got to tell you something. A lot of people love this marathon stuff. Many major cities have them. But I don't really get it. I don't understand when running became a sport. To me, running is what you do when something's chasing you. Other than that, there's no reason to run anywhere. But yet it's turned into a sport. I get the running of the bulls, not the fact that they even have that event, but the fact that people run from the bulls. I get that. There's a reason to run. Why don't they combine running of the bulls and the Boston Marathon? That would give the marathon a reason. I don't know. Is it just me? I kind of think it is just me.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you very much.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Now, on top of all of this, in the Boston area today, it's raining. As a matter of fact, there are thunderstorms, and there's some heavy downpours, certainly at the outset of this running event. And yet, people still do it. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I'm not even going outside to take the garbage out because it's raining. Much less run 26 miles in it. Are you kidding me? At what point in your life do you say, I'm not doing that? That's stupid. Now, I'm not talking about the athletes that train for this all year long. Why, I have no idea, but nonetheless, whatever. I'm talking about the common individual that decides I'm going to run 26 miles in a marathon, and I really don't know what I'm doing. What's wrong with you? I met a guy on Saturday. He was a member of a chamber music little orchestra thing. And I went to hear chamber music on Saturday. No, I'm not a dork. I happen to think that's a talented, wonderful way to see a performance. And the guy gets up to the microphone and says, we're going to be playing, there was a clarinet concerto or something. They were going to play some Scott Joplin, which I guess is not a concerto. And he said, by the way, I'll be running in the Boston Marathon on Monday. And people applauded him. And I felt like standing up and saying, what the fuck's wrong with you? Why in the world would you do something like that? The guy was not a long-legged, skinny person. He was like a schlumpy little clarinet player. Not that all clarinet players are schlumpy. But, I mean, he was just a guy with a beard and decided I'm going to run 26 miles with other people in the rain on Monday, and I really felt like pulling him to the side and saying, what's wrong with your life that you have to do this? And his response would probably be, it's the challenge. You've got to take challenges in life. Running somewhere? What? not a challenge. What are you running from? It's a metaphor is what it is, sir. What are you running from? What do you do? What do you do for fun? I run away from things. He would say, no, I'm not running away. I'm running toward the goal line. Oh, okay, great, great. Tell your heart what a good time you're going to have. You know, your heart isn't made to run 26 miles. Oh, yeah, but I've been training for this. Training for it? What, do you run around the block 10 times? What do you mean training for it? And why? Why would you waste the time to run somewhere with a lot of other people? Well, I don't expect to win. No kidding, really? You don't? That's amazing. I thought you did. I don't know. They actually have a stretch of the Boston Marathon called Heartbreak Hill. That's not encouraging. I died on Heartbreak Hill. That's more than a heartbreak, baby. You see, that doesn't mean your lover left you. It means that your heart gave out. That's what that means. Heartbreak Hill. I broke my heart. She left me. She didn't leave you. You broke your heart because a vein popped. God, what are you doing to yourself? I don't think the heart was made to run 26 miles. By the way, take a cab. Wasn't there a New York City marathon runner? I don't know, Rosie Ruiz, or I'm confusing her with something else. I don't know. Anyway, she ran the New York City Marathon, and apparently at one point in the race, she hopped in a cab, and she showed up toward the end of the race and actually won it, or came in like really close to winning or something. And then they found out that she took a cab, and many people maligned her for that. I think she should get the trophy. I think that's creative thinking. I mean, she ain't stupid. It's not a stupid woman. Why should I run all that distance to win a marathon? I just hop in the cab. And what's amazing about that is usually the marathon route is closed off to traffic. So getting around even within a proximity of the marathon route is difficult in a cab. So kudos to her. I think that was the real achievement. If you've ever been to New York and you try to get anywhere in a cab rather quickly, what she accomplished was amazing. To get through that traffic, to get toward the end of the races, that's must have been quite a cab ride. So, you know, that's really more impressive to me than her running 26 miles or whatever. 26 miles, holy crap. That's a long time. That's quite a distance. Wow. 26 miles, what are you, nuts? I don't know. These people are going to be sick tomorrow. A lot of runners, apparently, before the marathon, they eat a lot of pasta because they need a lot of carbs. I've been told not to eat that because it will kill me. So I don't know. I guess it's okay to eat a lot of spaghetti if you're going to run 26 miles. But to be honest with you, that meal ain't worth it. And then they use running in order to raise money. You know, horrible diseases, yes, but then they run little marathons, and you're supposed to contribute money to a runner to help them reach their goal or something. I still don't get the math on that. But if someone came up to me and said, "Ron, I'm running a marathon next week. Can you donate some money to me as a sponsor?" Sponsor for what? To help you pay the price of your sneakers? I don't understand. What am I doing? What am I doing here? Well, actually, Ron, I'm running for cancer. Okay, look, I don't know what you're telling me, but if you have cancer, I would take it easy. I mean, I don't understand. So, no, it's not me that has the cancer. I'm running for somebody who has cancer in order to raise money for cancer. I'm running in honor of cancer. I totally lost you. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. And why don't you knit a comforter for cancer or something? Why are you running for it? Why are you putting yourself out like that? I don't. It's the metaphor. Everything's a metaphor. It's a matter of it's achieving your goals. That's what it is. Achieving your goal of what? Of what? To get to a finish line running from a place? What are you talking about? If you're that much of a runner, why do you even own a car? When you go shopping, why don't you just go to the grocery store, grab your bags, and run home 26 miles? I mean, what is... I don't understand you. I'm not understanding anything here with the running. Slow down. Take it easy. Your heart doesn't want that. If your body was talking to you, it would probably talk you out of it. Oh, no. Oh, no. She's making me run 26 miles. I'm not going to be able to do this. That's your heart talking. That's the voice that your heart has. I don't know if you knew that. And then people actually line the streets at a marathon to watch people run by. I don't get that either. I don't even understand people that stand in the gallery at a golf match, at a golf game, much less standing along a marathon route. They stand there and they watch people run by. What are your expectations here? It's not an auto race where something's going to crash. It's not something where, like, maybe a runner will fall down and maybe 20 of them, like a domino thing, will fall down behind them. That'll be fun to watch. Nothing's going to happen. People are going to run by. Sure, they'll be wearing different color clothing. Well, look, there's a person wearing a red sweatshirt.
And look, there's one that has a little mask on. Oh, and there's one with pink sneakers. What the hell are you doing? Why are you standing there watching people run by? Is that a sport? Is that a thing?
I think it is rather cruel. I can't imagine just standing there watching somebody else run by. I mean, if you're going to do that, you might as well run with them. But just to stand there with a nice, comfortable cup of coffee in your hand, watching other people dying as they're trying to get their last gasp of breath as they venture up Heartbreak Hill, I don't know. And then when I watch the marathon on TV, which is the most passive thing you can do, excuse my cough. I think the marathon's running like 2 hours if you're like part of the elite. I guess those are people that have millions of dollars. I don't know what that means. And you watch them cross the finish line in the downtown Boston area. They cross the finish line. And what do you witness when you watch the end of a marathon and watch them cross the finish line? People basically just collapse. The marathon officials kind of catch them at the finish line and cart them off like war victims. It's sickening. It's just like it's like watching prize fighting, you know. It's like watching boxing. You're voluntarily getting yourself beat up. You're voluntarily taking the heart muscle and extending it about as far as it's gonna go. Congratulations, you ran 26 miles. You're on the border of congratulations and stupid. You're right on the border of that line. There are certain countries that always seem to do well. Kenya does well. Ethiopia. These are people that apparently all they do is run. I don't really know. I guess in those countries they don't have cars. I really don't understand why they're fit. And then you see these Americans running the marathon with a hamburger in each hand. Kind of training is that? You don't see a lot of fat people running the marathon. I'm sure there are. But the cameras don't kind of take pictures of those guys. You don't see a lot of fat. You don't see a lot of overweight people running a marathon. It's because you can't. Because you can't. These are people that check with their doctors first and said, "Doc, I'm running the marathon next week." And the doctors say, oh no, you're not. You do, and it'll be the last time you run anything. Oh, no, you're not. You do that, you find yourself another Dr. Death Wish person. Oh, no, you're not. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. It's so confusing. But again, people love this marathon crap. I think there's something wrong with me. There's got to be something wrong with me, I guess. I'm missing something. I don't know what it is, but I'm missing it.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Bandera. I wish I could listen to it too, but sometimes he says bad words.
When I was a kid, which was a little time ago, my mother took me to the store and we bought some sneakers, and I would wear them in the afternoons when I got home from school, and I would run around the block, not 26 miles, I would run around the block and, you know, in my little sneakers, and they would get all messed up. Within about 2 months, my mother would have to buy me new sneakers because they would fall apart. Because I'm running around in the sneakers. I'm playing in dirt and mud and crap and stuff like that. On cement, on sidewalks. When did sneakers turn into a financial investment? When did sneakers require taking out a second mortgage on your home? What happened with sneakers, man? They were supposed to be the things that you just wore. The shoes were supposed to be expensive. The sneakers were just supposed to be something you slap on your feet to run around in. Now they're like ergonomically, I don't even know what that word means. They're ergonomically, scientifically prepared with high bounce polycarbons in a laboratory with rats running around in sneakers to find the most efficient bounce technique in a shoe comfort in order to perform in its highest capacity of athleticism. The hell, I just want to run around in a pair of crap shoes. What are you talking about? Must every child in the country wear footwear that is worthy of a professional basketball player? Is that a requirement now? When did sneakers turn out to be $100 plus? Are you serious, man? $100 plus. There's sneakers that are more than $100, a lot more than $100. Seriously, you got to be kidding me. I think you lost the concept of sneakers here. I mean, if I were a parent and my child put sneakers on, I'd say, "Oh no, don't wear those sneakers. They cost hundreds of dollars. Don't you wear them out." No, you keep them in that closet. You only wear those sneakers on special occasions when Sunday at church. You're not wearing things like that. Cost too much money for you to wear in the mud running around. You can't wear those things. It's too expensive. We can't get nice things for you. When did that happen? When did footwear become so expensive? I went out to buy a pair of knock-around shoes. I think I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. My mind is going. I can't remember what I talked about and what I didn't. But I went to, I mean, I have nice shoes. I have leather boots and things that I wear for special occasions so I can kick the shit out of things professionally. I want to knock-around shoes, you know, run down to the grocery store, throw these shoes on. Loafers, I think they're called. I don't know what the hell they call these things anymore. Couldn't find any that fit my feet for less than $70. $70 for knock-around shoes? I think you're misunderstanding the phrase knock-around shoes. That means I don't want to spend a lot of money. The only cheap shoes in the world are at Walmart. But you go to any Walmart in this country, and they've only got like three sizes left, and they're all narrow. They don't believe in making wide shoes. I happen to have wide feet. I'm 6'3". I have wide feet. Not extremely wide, but they ain't narrow. But yet Walmart doesn't seem to understand this. What size of shoes do you have at Walmart? Seven. Seven sizes? No, we have size seven. That's about it. Don't you get in stock every once in a while? We get a lot of sevens, apparently. I'm a size 11 and a half, 12. Walmart doesn't believe in half sizes. Either you're a 7 or a 14, nothing in between, I'm sorry. What? What about those big Walmart trucks that I see driving around on the highways? They don't have shoes in them? No, they don't. No, we're into food now. Oh, God. What the hell's going on with you people? What's wrong with you? I've never seen so many Amazon trucks in my life. They don't even say Amazon on them. They're just the little white vans. Like they're going to pull the side of the road and start snatching people. Selling people on the human trafficking on Amazon. You know, he's white. Watch out, it's a white van. Make believe you don't see it. Everything's Amazon. They're putting everybody out of business. It's Amazon home delivery stuff. I think Amazon wants to make sure you never leave your house again. Sure, maybe you have to go to work every once in a while, but beyond that, there's no reason to go to a store. We'll just bring everything to you. Okay, but you know what? You're kind of taking the fun out of life. But we're taking the fun out of... We're saying to the companies, we don't have any time in our lives to go to a store to buy something. I have no time for that. That's what we're saying. If you don't have time to go to a store on your way home from work, you better reassess your life. That was part of the fun of life, was going into a store and buying something. Now the public is saying, we don't really have time for that. What are you doing in its place? What are you doing? Playing with your phone? You have plenty of time to play with your phone, apparently. What's going on with us? See, millennials don't understand what I'm talking about because they didn't grow up with time. See, millennials are growing up with the supposition that there is no time for anything. That's their mantra. We were born into this world. I've got no time. I have no time to talk to you. I got no time. I got too much to do. I got no time. What a sad life for a millennial. When I was growing up, we had to find something to do. I got no time. What, are you kidding me? What a horrible life that is. All right, kids. Hey, we're going to speak to our guest right after this little mental bump.
We could play all the cool, exciting bumper music we want, and it won't change the fact that you're listening to a grumpy old man with a bug up his ass about just about everything. It's Ron Van Dam on New England Broadcasting. This kind of music gives him a screaming headache. That's why we play it.
Hello, Vince.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Vincent Manza joins us now. And we're talking about the nuclear arms treaty between Russia and the United States and, you know, others too. Vince is an expert in nuclear weapons policy. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the treaty between Russia and the United States, as far as that's concerned, is kind of shaky at this point.
Yes, the United States recently announced that it was withdrawing from one treaty, mm-hmm. the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, because Russia has been in violation for a long time now. And the other treaty that's still currently in place, the New START Treaty that covers long-range nuclear weapons, is up for extension in February 2021. We don't know whether the United States and Russia are going to extend it for 5 additional years. And then we're not sure whether anything is going to come to replace it. There are some obstacles for both countries in doing that. So future of arms control is highly uncertain.
What is the purpose of a treaty when, at any given time, even with a treaty, one country or another can break it for various reasons anyway?
Well, fortunately, what these treaties do is they set limits, and then they have these very intrusive, detailed verification regimes that allow us to observe and detect and identify whether Russia is choosing not to abide by the treaty limits, and a similar situation for Russia. So, in that sense, both countries have significant warning if the other country is breaking out of the treaty limits. So what it does is provide you predictability that and confidence that you know your forces are sufficient today, and you have a pretty good indication that there's going to be sufficient out into the future.
Mm-hmm.
And if the other country is violating the treaty, you're going to have some time to understand that and react if you need to.
Okay. Is China a concern, or are they usually just kind of standing in the wings?
China has a much smaller force than the United States in Russia,
really?
But they are modernizing mm-hmm. it. It's becoming more sophisticated. There's moderate growth in its overall size. And we do have some current concerns out into the future about China's long-term nuclear policy and strategy, and particularly if there's no treaty in between the United States and Russia, and the United States and Russia are increasing the size of their arsenals,
right.
It's possible that's going to put additional pressure on China's force to increase as well. So currently the United States and China have no real cooperative arrangement on nuclear weapons, and
right.
That's something that I think yeah. both countries should try and change and improve.
There can be security without a treaty as well, though, I understand.
We looked at how you might do arms control without a legally binding treaty, and there are options that will be available to the United States and Russia, and to the United States and China. So particularly with the United States and Russia, both countries could say they're going to continue to keep their forces at the levels set by the New START treaty. There's no reason that they would have to increase their force
mm-hmm.
sizes, and if both countries agree to stay at New START levels, that would be valuable. And there are things that they can do outside of a treaty to provide each country transparency into what the other's doing with its forces. So under New START, we provide these biannual data exchanges on deployed force levels. We could continue to do that outside of a treaty context. We provide notifications about whether missiles and the launchers for these missiles are deployed or non-deployed and where they are. We could continue doing that. There would be some procedural and legal issues associated with some of these options, but if the United States and Russia could work them out. So none of them are, I would say, as good as a legally binding treaty, but the situation isn't hopeless. There are things we could do.
When I get into conversation about this, the question always comes up, why are there so many, we're talking about nuclear arms, by the way, obviously. Why do we talk about nuclear arms where it doesn't take more than a handful or a dozen to do what you need to do for total destruction anyway? So why are there hundreds? What's the point of that?
Well, it's a good question, and so the United States and Russia have made fairly massive reductions since the end of the Cold War. The current force levels are largely set by an assessment of what does the United States need to do to deter nuclear attack,
mm-hmm.
not only on itself, but it's on its allies
mm-hmm.
as well. They're currently set by an assessment of what happens if some of the systems you have in place
mm-hmm.
start to fail and you need to replace them, so that increases the overall size of the force you need. And in particular for the United States, I think a big part of our force structure requirements are driven by what do we need to do to convince potential adversaries and our allies that,
mm-hmm.
that we are able to deter nuclear attacks on them as well.
Right. Okay. Where do we go to get more information on this?
So our report is available on the CNA website at www.cna.org, and it's anyone that wants to read it can, so they can find it there, and it deals with all of these issues in great depth.
Right. So bottom line, that if there is not a treaty or one is not agreed upon, then that's not, quote-unquote, the end of the world.
Absolutely. There are plenty of things the United States and Russia
mm-hmm.
could do. However, I think the best course of action for now would be to extend the treaty out until 2026
yeah.
and give each country more time to figure out what comes next, whether that's going to be trying to find ways to cooperate on arms control outside of a legally binding treaty or whether they can negotiate a new treaty. And giving themselves more time, I think, is the most prudent thing to do right now.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much for your conversation today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Take care. Well, that was cool. All right, I'm done for today. I'm done. Turn me over. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Will you join me then? I would love if you could do that. I wouldn't love it. I would like it. How about that? Well, until then, I wish you peace.